Welcome to our second segment of this afternoon's program. It's Sunday, the 16th of January, 2022. It is now 1:54 p.m. in this studio. I'm your host, Kieran Murdoch. On this segment, the topic that we'll be discussing surrounds the disputed legacies of many of our important historical figures and even our national heroes. And the topic was spawned by the current debate surrounding the late Sir George Walter's life and impact in reaction to the Prime Minister Gaston Browne's assertion that Sir George was undeserving of the honour of National Hero. We plan to discuss the broader issue of how the legacies of our political heroes, especially, and more broadly other persons of historical importance, continue to be disputed. For example, V.C. Byrd's legacy is sometimes disputed. Sir Leicester Byrd's legacy is sometimes disputed. And there are many who feel that in various instances, persons were given honors, rewards, or recognition which they didn't rightly earn or deserve. So, of course, this issue also is affected along party lines. And so the question this afternoon is whether or not we can ever get past that, whether or not we can ever get to a point where the good and bad of individuals is fairly and openly acknowledged by all with regard to their legacy. So, as I said, the question is, what must be done to overcome these often politically charged disputes over legacies within the public psyche? We are joined on this panel discussion by Mr. Dobri Nomad. He is a director and producer of theater and music. He's a playwright, a columnist, and a calypso writer, judge, and analyst. Among his principal interests, of course, are Caribbean history and black political thought. He is a Pan-Africanist, and he happens to currently be the chairman of Antigua and Barbuda's Reparations Support Commission. He joins us on Zoom, and we're happy to have him. Good afternoon, Mr. Dobri Nomad.
Good afternoon to you, Kieran. Good afternoon to your listeners.
We have joining us on the line Dr. James Knight. He is a former editor of the Outlet newspaper alongside the late Leonard Tim Hector. The paper functioned as a weekly organ of the Antigua Caribbean Liberation Movement. That's the ACLM. For the ACLM, the newspaper played a very important role in its heyday, and it claimed a circulation of around 5,000 copies at one point. Good afternoon to you, Dr. James Knight. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm pretty okay. Good afternoon to you and the audience.
Mr. Dobri Nomad, I want to ask you, there's a current debate that was sparked by comments by our Prime Minister surrounding Sir George Walter. But it occurred to me in sort of framing this discussion that it certainly isn't exclusive to George Walter, is it? I mean, there are other national heroes, national icons, particularly the political ones, whose legacies are often disputed. Is that not correct?
That is correct, and I really appreciate your reframing of the approach to this rather testy subject at this point in time.
Let me ask you, in terms of the culture, the national culture, I think many people have observed that we do have a tendency to fail to agree upon a legacy for some of our important historical figures. And I wonder if that is due to a lack of writing, a lack of historical writing, or whether or not that is simply due to a lack of acknowledgement of what literature there already is. What do you think? Is it that our historians have not written about our important figures enough and chronicled and catalogued them, or is it that we simply have not digested that information?
Well, I think it's a mixture of both, because we do have a lot of information written about, let's say, Sir Vivian Richards. We do also have 2-3 major studies. Paget Winter has done one. Max Hirst has done one of V.C. Byrd. Certainly, national hero Leicester Byrd, he has written. There is an autobiography, I think, of him, and plus other things have been written. I think that there is a failure, certainly, to digest this material. But I want to even go back before this, because we've been talking about the political nature and the political discussions, the political disagreements that come with the analysis of our national heroes. I think we need to go back to the legislation, for example, that determines, sets up the mechanisms for determining who our national heroes are. And if you do that, you will discover that the decision makers are political. The committee comprises of one person appointed by the Governor General, 2 from the Senate, and 4 from the House of Representatives. Now, these are six of the seven persons are active politicians. What results do we really expect from a committee of that sort, but a political decision? And so long as we have this political decision making in a country where we have active opposition, active government, where the country is split virtually down the middle 50-50, we will forever have these arguments so long as the decision makers remain political.
Dr. James Knight, would you agree with that? Is the process to determine who becomes, and that's not something that persons haven't said before, that the process as to who becomes whether a national hero, whether someone who gets knighted, whether someone who receives honors, that it's too political, and that by that very process, it is seen as a partisan decision, as opposed to a decision which everyone can respect?
Well, we have seen something recently in Barbados which should be very instructive to us. The Prime Minister announced on the night that Barbados became a republic that, surprise, surprise to many, Rihanna was a national hero. And there were those who had and still have some persons, even some of us, some reservations about it. There are those who think that she's still too young. Some people don't think that she has the level of maturity to take on that type of responsibility. There are those who worry that there is still, you know, such a wide window in the future open for her to cause some embarrassment because of her ill-preparedness for such an award, et cetera, et cetera. And what you find, that is mostly what is was said in terms of anyone who did not, you know, openly cheer and applaud at the moment. That was the type of reservation that was expressed. But in terms of her social responsibility, what she had done in Barbados, what she had done for Barbados, what she represented for Barbados internationally, what she had done over in the on the African continent in terms of philanthropism, etc., was not in doubt. And guess what? Prime Minister Motley was able to read out that night the established criteria for determining a national hero. And with that, nobody in Barbados has been able to argue, because that has been those were clear criteria set out that were agreed to by all parties. So any reservation about Rihanna had to be some other issue, but not that anybody could come out and say, look, this young woman does not deserve to be, because she fell quite clearly within all the established criteria. And that is what we need to look at.
Mr. Omar,
what Aubrey is saying is very important in that sense. If across the board there was an agreement that this is how national heroes are, this is how awards generally, the various categories are given out, one would only have to stick strictly to those criteria, and there could not be any major difference at the end of it.
And Mr. Ahmad, would you agree with that?
I certainly would. Coming to this discussion has really forced me to go back and examine the National Heroes Act in this country. And there are things, you know, that even someone like myself, who has been following some of these issues, I did not even realize existed in that National Heroes Act. That there are four categories, for example, of national hero: the most exalted order, the most distinguished order, the most illustrious order, and there's the princely order. But what is obvious, and I think I'm totally agreeing with James on this, is that there are no clear guidelines for how these orders are awarded or bestowed on people. The most established order of national hero is in recognition of preeminently distinguished service to Antigua and Barbuda and humanity. The distinguished order is for distinguished and outstanding service. The other one is for meritorious service. The last one is for invaluable service. I think we need to start, first of all, writing these things in proper English so that we can understand what this is all about. And to help us, how do we make these distinctions between preeminently distinguished and outstanding, et cetera, et cetera? This perhaps is the root of the problem that we are facing. Very, very unclear, ambiguous legislation governing these awards in the first instance, and two, that amorphous sort of language that we have in legislation is being judged by politicians. I don't think we can expect any other result.
And Dr. James Knight, for instance, I want to ask you, because there are other national icons, national persons of historical importance, who especially, and this is wrapped up much in the crux of our issue, especially when those persons were political. And so their actions were subject at the time of their lives to partisan wrangling. There was one side that supported them and one side that didn't. I want to ask you, what do you think the person of Tim Hector has become in our national psyche? Do you think that is an individual whom Antiguans, by and large, know, respect, acknowledge, and understand, for instance, his contribution to Antiguan Barbuda?
I have no doubt from all that I have heard, known, and, you know, in this country over the last decade, that unquestionably Tim Hector is the most distinguished and illustrious and princely and all the other things that people, they say there in the minds of the Antiguan people. But as you say, when you put the partisan, the narrow political judgment to it, you see overall, you know, there are some figures who would come out above that unquestionably, and some of them have not been awarded anything at all. Tim has got some irrelevant award, right? I say irrelevant because they don't mean anything to us ancestrally. They have nothing to do with our folks. All sorts of weird names, and to me, they may as well say Cinderella and Red Riding Hood award, you know? But the point is that we join people elsewhere in the world in celebrating their national heroes, often people who are we don't know much about, and we celebrate them because, I mean, let me put it this way, we were not close enough to see the warts in those people's faces. So we celebrate them wholeheartedly along with those people. But within those nations, there are people who have differences, you know, who question whether they deserve. But most people have a more clear set of criteria, especially these days, you know, in modern times, people have a much clearer set of criteria. My position in Antigua is that there would be the King Court Award. The national hero would be King Court. And you know, that's the person, the history of King Court and his struggle, his plot in Antigua and all that, his organizing of the people, people on the plantation and whatnot, is something that was highly promoted by the late Leonard Tim Hector, because he thought that it was important for people to understand. It's important for people to see their true heroes, people who have meant something in the history. They have played an important role in the historical development of their people, especially in our case, in the struggle for liberation and all that. People elsewhere have legends who are more fiction than fact in some cases, but they just make these stories sort of feel good about themselves, and we join them in celebrating. But here's a real hero who was thinking of and working and plotting towards the freeing of his people. And until this day, it is relevant, because we still need to understand how to free ourselves, you know, economically and all that. So Tim promoted that story because he thought it was important for the Antiguan psyche. Now, that's the national hero to me. And if you ask me after that who's a national hero, I would say that automatically, because V.C. Byrd was at the front of every stage of the evolution of our modern political history, he would automatically get a King Court Award. And Vivi Richards would automatically get a King Court Award. And all of the others would be studied individually and reviewed to determine what level of award they would get. This is how I personally would handle it.
Coming back to you, Mr. Dobrin Ahmad, I will recount my personal experience. When I was in primary school, secondary school, even State College, I don't ever recall doing specifically local history, Antiguan history. We did Caribbean history. We delved into Caribbean history. But in terms of any writings about the history of Antigua and Barbuda, and that sort of writing, exposing students to names and legacies of important persons in our history, both living and past, I don't so much recall that. I don't know if they do that now. Maybe they do, so I cannot say. But, I want to ask the question to you. Do you know if that if we do put Antiguan history books in the schools, and do you think it's something we should do?
No, we certainly don't. And this is something I think that so many of us have been calling for over the years, that greater attention be paid to our history. And greater attention also be paid to how it is taught in our schools and by whom it is taught. You know, I mean, even in context of this discussion about national heroes, I remember about 2 years ago, the Reparations Commission was doing something in celebration of National Heroes Day, and we could not find the profiles of those persons who have been designated or on whom the title of national hero has been bestowed. And we went through the right channels. We couldn't find them. So where is that booklet? Where is that small booklet with all the profiles and the biographies of these persons that we proclaim as national heroes? Clearly, the proclamation of national hero is not something that is only an award to the individual. It's an award to the society. It is to help us to understand the sort of qualities that this society admires and the sort of qualities that we are hoping our youth and our not so youth aspire to. If you go on the web right now and look for the profiles of our national heroes, you get one, two lines. Nellie Robinson started a school in 1918 and she was headmistress between 1898 and 1950. That's it. Sir George Walter was the second premier. He established the Social Security and the Labor Acts, which were adopted by many Caribbean countries. That's it. Prince Glass planned the revolt. The revolt failed. The plot was discovered, and he was executed. But certainly, even those persons responsible for this award, for the award of National Hero, must do a better job of not only communicating to us the sort of criteria under which the award was made, but to help us to understand to whom this the honor was bestowed. No, we are not doing a good job at our history, at our contemporary history, as identifying qualities in our society that we think that our youth should aspire to. And I know that this is not true all across the region. For example, in St. Vincent, Prime Minister Ralph Gonsalves a couple of months ago has named the three historians and has given them, I guess, all the support they require to write the history of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. I mean, Arnold Thomas is one of them, Adrian Fraser is one of them, and another one is a historian, I think, at some university in the United States. And so there are examples of how this can be done. But for us, you know, we go into Parliament, we make the award, and 2 months later, we argue about the award, and really nothing on the ground to help us to propel these sorts of qualities in our people.
It's interesting you should say that, Mr. Ahmad, because, you know, I've heard persons say that it would be worthwhile for us to have events that surround our national icons, just like we have events to celebrate different things. And you could put them in any different format. But having an event around a national icon or someone of importance, some sort of act. I mean, for instance, I know, of course, we have a VC birthday. But, you know, a more grounded event that takes place that exposes people seasonally to knowledge of the importance of the individual who is the center of that event. Do you think that is something that we ought to do?
Oh, yes, certainly. We do have a National Heroes Day, but that revolves about simply laying wreaths at appropriate positions. We in the Reparations Commission have been very, very conscious of matters of this sort. A couple of years ago, we actually staged a relay that took our youth in relay form, athletics, running from the Viv Richards Stadium to the burial places of Sir George and VC, etc., etc. We ran to all the way to T.R. Robinson School, etc., and produced for youth involved in these things, and produced small profiles, small written profiles of the people to whom the tombs they were visiting, etc. And I think that we need to see this enlarged. We need to see that type of idea, especially among and within those agencies that have resources that, let's say, those of us in the Reparations Support Commission, that we do not have. We need to see a lot more thinking about this. Every year I get a letter addressed to Dobrin Umad, come and lay a wreath at the statue of Prince Klaas. It is the same letter I get every year for the last 5 years. Nothing has changed. Nothing has been developed out of it except put on a nice dashiki and come and lay a wreath. We need to do a lot more with ideas like this, you know. So we agree the idea that we need national heroes. Okay, so maybe we don't even select them properly, but we must take the idea further than simply having the names on paper and laying a wreath at their tombs.
Dr. James Knight, let me bring you in. I want to ask you how do you think we ought to speak about our national heroes once they are named national heroes? And the reason I ask this question, of course, is because we did have a large controversy within the past week over the PM statement surrounding Sir George Walter. A lot of people use the term "don't speak ill of the dead" in relation to it. I personally sort of felt that you should always be able to debate the legacy of someone. It shouldn't be that someone's legacy is off limits and you can't challenge it at all. The facts are there and are written. If you're wrong, you're wrong. And if you're right, you're right. But that it shouldn't be that you ought never to even raise a question in challenge to someone's legacy. But then at the same time, there'll be many who will say that if someone is named the national hero, that they ought to be spoken about with a certain respect and regard, even in the midst of challenging a legacy. But how do you think we should speak about our national heroes publicly?
Well, I am not opposed to speaking ill of the dead if, you know, ill ought to be spoken. Like somebody saying that, you know, Edward Seago deserved all this fault, this praise that he was getting when he was so destructive of Jamaica. You know, I say, no, you speak the truth, even if it's ill, too sad. But in the case here, you're speaking of a different situation. Of course, George Walter would not have been any Seago, quite, you know, to the contrary. And but the thing is, they are already declared national heroes. And so, you know, probably one needs to, you know, be far more diplomatic in speaking with them. Diplomacy is necessary, you know, in our daily affairs, whether political or otherwise. There's a reason why there's diplomacy. And so diplomacy means that it's not always how you feel. Diplomacy involves even hypocrisy, right? So the point is that one has to be diplomatic. Once there are people declared national hero, one has to treat that with some regard until otherwise is done. If one is going to suggest you know, a national participation in some process to review that and so on. That is, to me, is quite okay. And I think that is necessary. And when Darwin speaks of the absence of literature, of booklet with you know, the criteria, well, the reason why persons are national heroes, that booklet shouldn't come after the persons are declared national heroes. That should be the information that the population is getting way before, so that that is used as the guide by which the persons who are nominating, because there should be a nomination first, and that information is what people peruse and analyze and so forth, and then the nominations can be made. Look at a country like Cuba that has one national hero, Jose Marti, and that might be for as long as Cuba ever exists. But nobody questions the importance of Fidel Castro in this world, not just Cuba. Now, the story, I remember I was in Cuba when Jesse Jackson visited Cuba, and he thought that as, you know, black man, he wanted to lay a wreath at the tomb of Antonio Maceo. And he was told, well, you know, first you have to lay the wreath at Jose Marti, because he is the national hero. So this is how you do things as a matter of respect, etc. Now, because that's the national hero. But you have so much information on Jose, on Antonio Maceo, that nobody questions if he's a national hero. And he is treated as one, except that he isn't named one. And Fidel Castro will always be treated as a national hero in Cuba, although he may never be named on. If I judge the man properly, he has probably insisted that never be done. You understand? So this is what I think, that they are, one should have that information about all the people who are, you consider important. There should be enough information on them, and that is presented at the moment of nomination. And if you say, look, we only want to award two or three people this particular national award this year, because we don't want it to clutter the place with awardees. So we're choosing the three most outstanding. And so you have information that's gathered on all of these people and their contributions, nationally, regionally, internationally, whatever. And then that information is used as the guide when people are being nominated and the final selection is made. Mm-hmm. But I think until we do that and we clear up the situation where everybody is clear about the criteria and so on, what we have is what we have. And we have to treat that with the regard that is due.
Let me, because we do have to end. We are just about 2 minutes over time, so I want to give Mr. Dobrin Abad the ability to give us a final word. Mr. Omar, at the same time, I want to ask you, perhaps we should just establish, hearing you guys speak, it came to mind, perhaps we should just establish a National Honor Society with persons whose regular routine activity from year to year is to assess persons, receive nominations and so on, but it would be removed from the political aspects. You would have different representation, media, academia, NGOs, business persons, even politicians to from different sectors of society, and even, you know, giving out commendations on a yearly basis, so that ultimately, after a lifespan, when someone gets a very substantive award, you can actually point back and say, you know, they were receiving commendations, you know, every 2 years for their various good works. But what do you think, Mr. Omad, leaving us with your final word?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's an idea worth considering. Although one would hope that those persons in government, those persons responsible for this particular activity, would do it properly. Instead of us having to run, let's say, parallel committees, you know, parallel achievements, etc. That we really, in a small society like this, where we do have limited human resources, etc., I don't think we really should have to be duplicating efforts. And just one quick comment before I go about the question that I think you asked, James. I think that this whole idea of national heroes is that we are talking of people who are idolized by the entire society. People idolize for outstanding achievements, people idolize for their courage, etc. But what we find, while these arguments will always continue, is that if we are investing these national awards on politicians, especially here in Antigua, we had two of our national heroes were overwhelmingly voted out of office by the people of this country. We cannot but expect that type of conversation, whether it's done with respect or diplomatically or not, to happen. It's in the system. We have it's built into the system, and we are getting results from how the system is particularly structured. And the only way we're going to get around that is on a restructuring of the system, a restructuring of the way we make these awards, etc.
With that, I think we can leave it there. I want to say thank you to Mr. Dobrin Omar. That was the last voice you heard there, folks. He joined us on Zoom. He's a director and producer of theater and music. He's a playwright, a columnist, a calypso writer, judge, and analyst. Of course, his principal interests are in Caribbean history and Black political thought. He's currently the head of the Antigua and Barbuda Reparations Support Commission. We were joined online by Dr. James Knight, former editor of the Outlet newspaper, alongside the late Tim Hector. Of course, that paper functioned as the weekly organ of the Antigua Caribbean Liberation Movement. Thanks to both of you for joining us this afternoon.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.